Welcome to The Critique. Today, we are looking at a raw, time-stamped chat log where people pivot from arguing about video game hitboxes directly into heartbreaking confessions about the trauma of adulthood. Reorganizing these fragmented chronological posts into distinct thematic narrative arcs is going to significantly enhance the reader's ability to follow the core arguments.
I mean, I see where you're going with that, but I have to ask right out of the gate.
Yeah, go ahead.
Isn't the chronological chaos sort of the entire point of a message board? Like, if someone is documenting a highly active internet community, doesn't tampering with the timeline destroy the raw authenticity of how they communicated?
Well, it's a fair question, but the current weakness of the material is that this strict chronological post-by-post format creates a totally chaotic reading experience. You're basically treating the reader like a database administrator.
Right, making them sort the signal from the noise?
Exactly. Insightful multi-post critiques are constantly interrupted by unrelated tangential posts. It is exactly like eavesdropping on a crowded room where, you know, five different radios are playing at once.
Okay, so there's a risk that focusing solely on a chronological log might overlook the actual intellectual depth hidden in the chaos.
Completely. The material makes a strong case for highlighting indie game tropes, but the brilliant observations just get buried.
I can see that.
So the suggestion to improve this is to abandon the strict timeline and instead restructure the material into thematic clusters or chapters. You trace a specific conversation from its inception to its conclusion.
Got it. So curating the flow.
Right. Let me give you a concrete example from the submission. There is this genuinely brilliant debate happening about the flaws of indie darling games.
The quasi-minimalism stuff?
Yes. The users are unpacking how modern developers try to emulate the lonely atmosphere of classic games like Shadow of the Colossus.
But they lack the confidence to actually be minimal.
Exactly. So instead, they stuff the game with purple prose, endless lore text, and, like, totally cluttered user interfaces. It's a rigorous debate.
Yeah, I love the phrase, ninny-core indie clutter slop UIs.
It's hilarious, right? But right in the middle of this thesis, the timeline forces you to read an isolated, completely unrelated comment about someone wanting Mulucci in Smash Ultimate.
Oh, wow.
And then it's followed by a random meme reaction about Dragon Quest Builders.
Okay, I admit, that is intense cognitive whiplash. It completely kills the momentum of the argument.
It really does. So if you aggregate all those posts debating quasi-minimalism, UI clutter, and lore into one cohesive section about game design philosophy, it reads so much better.
That makes sense. And I assume you could do the same for the drama-focused parts of the transcript.
Absolutely. You could pull the various critiques of Huffy, the character assassination of Rose Lalonde, and the Chuck Tingle Kickstarter controversies into a dedicated subchapter focusing on creator fandom disillusionment. These are just a few ways to reorganize the flow to keep the audience actually engaged with the arguments being made.
That is so much stronger. But wait, even if we group all these massive arguments together, it's not going to matter if the reader has no idea what a fail girl or a trickster is.
Anchoring the highly specialized internet jargon with seamless contextual clues will prevent the text from alienating readers outside this specific subculture.
Yeah, because the weakness here is that the document relies way too heavily on localized slang.
And inside jokes and esoteric references.
Right, like Woodstock or Nankish and all these niche anime tropes. There's literally no on-ramp for the uninitiated.
Exactly. It creates a high barrier to entry that limits the material's overall impact.
But to play devil's advocate again, what I really like about this part is how unfiltered and genuine the dialogue feels, especially when discussing the Kickstarter drama. If we translate everything into sterile English, don't we ruin its raw appeal?
We absolutely would, and we don't want to sanitize the text. The suggestion is to integrate subtle inline exposition or framing devices that define these terms organically.
Okay, so building on that point, what if we looked at it from the perspective of a mainstream reader? How might we provide a translation key without breaking the immersion?
Well, you maintain the authentic voice of the community, but you act as a stealthy tour guide. For a concrete example, let's look at the Woodstock discourse.
Right, which is currently impenetrable.
Totally. So you could introduce a brief introductory sentence before that block that frames Hussey as a controversial webcomic creator and Woodstock as the fandom's coded term for his work.
Oh, I see. Just a soft framing.
Right. You don't need a heavy-handed Wikipedia paragraph.
And what about the weird archetypes, like tricksters?
Alternatively, when a user mentions tricksters, you could use formatting to define it, like maybe a margin note, a stylized glossary pop-up, or a brief analytical preface.
A margin note is interesting.
Yeah, you use it to explain these specific character archetypes. These are just a couple of possibilities out of many to bridge the gap between insider knowledge and outsider comprehension.
I like that because it almost leans into the archival feel of the document. You're teaching the reader the language so they can appreciate the poetry.
That's a great way to put it.
But I guess that brings us to the final piece of the puzzle. We fixed the structure, we've translated the language, but why are we reading this?
Highlighting the underlying psychological motivations behind the user's debates will elevate the text from a mere digital archive to a compelling sociological narrative.
Ah, the classic so what problem.
Exactly. The weakness of the current draft is that while it thoroughly documents what the users are discussing, it stops short of synthesizing why these specific fixations matter.
It just leaves the raw data to speak entirely for itself.
Right, which totally obscures the emotional core of the text. It documents their disdain for modern indie game UI, their frustration with the media hype cycle, and their complex relationship with high school anime archetypes. But it doesn't explain the human element.
That's fascinating. But, I mean, if I'm reading a raw chat log, doesn't a narrator popping in to psychoanalyze the users force an interpretation on them?
I wouldn't call it forcing an interpretation. You're just providing the psychological landscape. The suggestion is to add editorial bookends or synthesizing paragraphs at the close of major debates.
Okay, to draw out the broader thematic implications.
Yes. You synthesize their cynicism, anhedonia, and longing. Let's look closely at the section discussing the desire to return to childhood.
Yeah, that part is wild.
It's incredibly jarring. You have users complaining about character proportions, and then suddenly there's this deeply raw post about wanting to be a kid again, to escape adult responsibilities and guilt.
And another user replies wanting identity death, literally longing for a loss of memories.
Right, and right now the text just presents that massive tonal shift and moves on.
It just leaves it sandwiched between complaints about video game aesthetics.
Exactly. So for a concrete example of how to fix this, after that block of posts, you could provide an analytical summary reflecting on the community's collective nostalgia and isolation.
Oh, wow. Could the evidence also support a broader conclusion, like the idea that this harsh critique of media is actually a coping mechanism for modern digital isolation?
Yes, absolutely. When summarizing the frustration over the media hype cycle or the fail girl and goth tropes, you can explicitly connect this to the broader internet culture's exhaustion with hyper-commercialization.
That makes so much sense, because a user explicitly mentions how showing genuine excitement feels unbecoming now.
Right, it's a defensive posture. These are just a few ways to inject a powerful, resonant so what into the raw data. It transforms them from just angry internet users into highly sensitive people navigating a chaotic world.
You finally see the humanity beneath the subcultural armor.
Exactly. To recap today's critique, this source material is a treasure trove of raw, authentic internet culture, but it requires a stronger editorial hand to maximize its impact.
Yeah, it definitely needs some structural help.
The key actionable suggestions are to abandon the chronological format in favor of thematic chapters, integrate subtle contextual clues for subcultural jargon to avoid alienating readers, and add analytical bookends that explain the psychological why behind the community's fixations.
It's going to make a huge difference.
We invite the listener to implement these structural and thematic changes and submit their revised work back in for more feedback.